This is a production of Cornell University.
You're going 25 times the speed of sound, and 6 minutes later, you're on the surface. And that's a very scary 6 minutes. Everything that you worked for a decade or more, is dependent on what happens in those 6 minutes. Yeah, your heart's in your throat. I mean, it's a terrifying, wrenching thing. When we first started working on this project, the rovers and their scientific payloads were nothing more than, you know, sketches on a whiteboard. And so we had to go through the entire process of taking that concept and bringing it to reality, getting it on top of a rocket and getting it to Mars. There are actually pieces of hardware on the rovers on the surface of Mars that were built by 19 and 20-year-old Cornell undergraduate students. They carved their initials in the backs of them, actually. It's on the surface of Mars now.
Tree rings provide an archive of past environment and climate as well as date, and you can date them specifically to the year. So I can hold a piece of wood and say, this is 2003 BC, this particular ring. So it's an almost unique resource in the world. It's one of the few ways you can precisely say this event was at a given year.
It was growing about 1800 meters altitude, and the tree's been alive for many hundreds of years before it was sadly killed by a
And once you move back a few hundred years, and only a few hundred years, you'll find that there is no instrumental record, there are no weather records, there are no observations of what was going on in the world. Trees and also ice cores, for example, from the polar regions, are one of the very few ways we can study the distant past in a precise and accurate fashion.
We really hope and pray that the work we do in New Orleans, the combination of mobilizing committed civic leaders, the best of advanced technology, and an interdisciplinary planning and design team from not one great university, but seven great universities, will result in solutions to low-lying waterfront communities like New Orleans, which exist all over the world.
If you take a plastic and you introduce a ceramic or an inorganic to make a composite out of it, you can make it to be stiffer, but at the same time you make it to be easier to break. You make it more brittle, as we say. In nanocomposites you can actually have both. Well, the applications can be really very broad. One can think of these materials as alternatives for automotive applications.
I really believe that tackling the renewable energy problem is in such a part of human development. We're somewhere in the neighborhood of about 8 billion gallons of ethanol from corn today. The cellulosic ethanol is a little bit more complicated because we're trying to get more technology out there. The biological processing of biomass is particularly strong here at Cornell because we've made such major investments in the life sciences. And that's one of the privileges of being at Cornell University as a professor.
You know, that is, you're right, it's very consistent. That's why people in the industry do it.
Because you're giving a great deal of freedom to operate within the academic community to explore, to develop new possibilities. And there's not many places in the world that will allow you to do that.
My research in male infertility mostly involves looking at the causes for male infertility, particularly from a genetic standpoint, what causes men to have low sperm production. So working together with the IVF team, we've now been able to essentially create new groups of patients who can be treated who previously we considered sterile. So fortunately, we've been able to develop a close understanding with the Cornell Ithaca engineers and the bioengineering staff of what is possible from their standpoint, and they've been able to get a better understanding what sort of medical problems or clinical problems engineering applications could be applied to.
There is no other university like Cornell University. It's a distinguished Ivy League institution that was started as New York State's land-grant institution. There is no other school like it. Some of the most robust discovery anywhere in the country, and yet has the soul of a public university. One of the amazing things about Cornell, which is all over the world, in North America, the Caribbean, Europe, the Middle East, and Asia, is that one can study literally anything from the Mars rover to architecture and the fine arts.
The students who come and work with me and do a variety of things from archaeology, dendrochronology, I guess reflect Cornell's strength in the sense that anybody can do just about anything because they come from all over the place. We have people coming in from the sciences, from earth and atmospheric sciences, in principle from places like physics. We're now collaborating with the CHESS facility here, which is this unique synchrotron that Cornell has to look at ancient tree rings and other materials. So we are a genuine interdisciplinary study.
Studying art at Cornell has really let me not only pursue my more creative passions, but also, you know, my passion for learning, which is something that really has carried me this far in the educational system already. So in addition to all my studio classes like painting, drawing, photography, sculpture, all the fun stuff, I also get to take the fun academics. So I've been taking, you know, Chinese language courses. I've been studying the classics like the Greek comedies and the Roman tragedies, and it's been really fun. I've been able to get a liberal arts as well as a fine arts education.
I'm from a small farm, an Amish Mennonite farm actually, in the middle of Kansas. And college wasn't something that a lot of people did. I really wanted to double major in English and music. Some of your more traditional musicology programs probably wouldn't allow me to write a thesis on Bob Dylan. So when I was given the opportunity to do a senior thesis, Bob Dylan immediately leapt to mind.
My research on arthritis and what we're looking for to try and fix degenerative joint disease, or what is osteoarthritis, we use the horse as a model. It's a very good model for human disease. There's no place like Cornell to conduct our sort of really translational research. We have access to people that think nothing about protein three-dimensional structure, and then we have access to laboratory animals and the clinical data as well. And so we can take our research from this laboratory bench, take it right down to the operating room and apply it.
Cornell is a terrific place to have your career. There are unique facilities. We are already in one of them. Duffield Hall is certainly at the forefront of nanotechnology, but there are other research facilities that are extremely good and cutting edge. The other thing is the quality of the students is superb.
Composition is probably impossible to teach, and although I myself had some very distinguished teachers, including Carl Husa, who is probably the most famous composer ever to grace this campus, I'm not sure what I learned from them, but I learned by being around them what it meant to be a professional and what it meant to have a kind of ethics of making art.
I came here in 1980 to go to graduate school, and I studied with A.R. Emmons, Robert Morgan, Ken McLean, Phyllis Janowitz in poetry, and Alison Lurie actually in fiction, who was teaching the poetry workshop. It was a wonderful experience for me and really a life-changing one.
The spring of my junior year, I took a class here in this astronomy department that was being taught by a professor, Joe Vavorka, who at that time was a member of the science team for the Viking mission to Mars. Viking was a mission that was the first one to land successfully on the surface of Mars. And Joe was a member of that mission team and taught a course about Mars. And I took it. It was an exceptional opportunity to be able to take a course like that from a professor who is directly involved in that kind of research. And I came out of that course knowing exactly what I wanted to do with the rest of my life.
Lander, a rover, something. This one was a crasher. Okay? And there hasn't been too much else quite like this one.
I think the professors at Cornell are very passionate about their duties to their students. They don't just give us textbook problems. They make sure to push us to the limit so that we're really learning what we came here to learn.
Wrote a song about some aspect of Charles Darwin and his life. Sort of got inspired by a specific confrontation between a man named Thomas Huxley, who was one of Charles Darwin's sort of fiercest proponents. It was a confrontation between him and the Bishop of Oxford, Sam Wilberforce.
My students make me a more interesting person. I don't know if they make me a better composer, but I have the sort of idealistic feeling that more interesting people are also more interesting artists. And one of the things that we want for our students is that they become the most interesting people they can be. Then they can also be the most interesting professionals.
Cornell was started in the 1860s as a land-grant university and is the land-grant university for New York State. And that concept of the land-grant mission has evolved, of course, over the decades, so that I think about Cornell as the land-grant university to the world, that we have as our mission, as our passion, public service and the application of education and discovery to the public's needs.
The land-grant mission of a place like Cornell is really the intersection of our teaching, our research, our outreach, in order to benefit the people of New York, of the nation, and of the world. And it's really quite exciting.
The 9/11 study, which we received a lot of press for, was a study of 3,000 firefighters, many of which were involved in the tragedy of 9/11. I was asked by the president of the union and his colleagues to do a study of the trauma that the firefighters went through. This was, to my mind, the best example of the land-grant mission. Real partners moving together. The union, the firefighters in New York, and the School of Industrial Labor Relations. And we've done some wonderful work with them, and we continue doing wonderful work.
I'm a board member for Habitat for Humanity, the Cornell chapter, and here at Cornell, we service the surrounding areas of Cortland, Corning, Elmira. We just finished dedicating a house last week at the Cortland location, which we've been working on for a year and a half, and it's just getting students involved in their community and letting them see things beyond Cornell.
So when I went to college, I really wanted to go to some place where I could meet a lot of different people. Initially, I thought I could only do that if I went to school in New York City or someplace like that, but coming to Cornell, I found there's been a lot of diversity, not just in faces, but in personality. We really meet kids from all over the campus, all different majors, and all over the world, and it's fun to meet people that aren't like you.
When you get students from all over the world, who have so many different ways of thinking. They bring all of these cultural backgrounds to the classroom, and our discussions are absolutely wonderful.
Cornell is and has been for 100 years one of the most international global universities in the United States. Right now, of about 21,000 students, 3,000 are from over 100 different countries. And so we gain immeasurably by having these friends and neighbors and colleagues from literally all over the world on our campus.
I still am struck every time I drive up here. Fly into New York City and you get in your car and you drive up here. It's 3 hours of the most unbelievable natural beauty you're ever going to see. You know, the Finger Lakes are right here. If you just look out the door now, even today as we speak, the rolling hills, Ithaca and Cornell sits on a hill. As you look out around the hills, the green and the red and the yellow and the brown and what have you, it's absolutely gorgeous.
I think this place is very conducive to dreaming in and of itself. If you look around, there's such a sense of history. If you walk across the quad and look at the old 19th century buildings and the statue of Ezra Cornell, sometimes I'll come out at the end of a day and after teaching my last class and step outside and the carillon will start.
You see the architecture of the buildings, the diversity in the buildings between the engineering quad and the arts quad, the old and the modern, and then you just see the landscape. If you stand back, you'll be in awe.
You know, I would found an institution where any person can study any subject, which we hear all the time, far too often. In fact, appears to be true. I mean, you know, it's hard to think of something that's not going on at this place. I like to say that at Cornell you can connect the dots in your own way. There are lots of dots at Cornell. It's a very big, very messy place. But every student, every faculty member can make his or her own route through this maze, and it can be a different but very rich experience for each of us.
In between the shadows.